This is Audible.
Simon & Schuster Audio presents Cowboy Up, The Coming Home Series, Book 3, by Harper Sloan. Read by Jason Carpenter and Elizabeth Louise.
1. Caroline. Tin Man by Miranda Lambert. The bright, speeding blaze of lightning shooting through and across the night sky illuminates the road ahead of me. The enormous boom of thunder that follows quickly on the heels of such a beautiful display makes me jump in my seat and grip the wheel tighter. Nothing but rain-soaked asphalt and darkness meet my gaze as I continue my drive. Normally, I would recognize the weather as an omen preluding my night's plans. A warning, perhaps, but one I won't be heeding. My mind is all over the place from my call earlier, and I just want to escape. But more importantly, I know I need a change. What am I doing? I mumble into the emptiness around me. No one answers. Of course no one does. I'm just talking to myself like usual. Heavens me, if that's not a sign that I'm going insane, I don't know what is. That's what happens when you spend so much time closed off. For the first time, the carefully constructed freedom that I've built for myself feels crippling, or perhaps like it's caving in on me, the loneliness becoming too much. I've never been good at being alone, something I always knew, but I never realized how bad I was at it until now. I built my new life around just that, though, so like it or not, it's time to get over it. It could be worse, I remind myself. Shaking off the melancholy, I continue driving, knowing that when I reach my destination, I'll be with people who care about me. Holy cow, I wheeze, gripping the wheel tighter when an even louder clap of thunder breaks the silence. I've always loved storms, but the sky's beautiful display is only amping up my already frazzled nerves, and I feel the unfortunately familiar burn of fear creeping up my spine before I can push it down. I pull off the deserted back road and onto the shoulder, my headlights illuminating a sign announcing that I'm now leaving the town of Wire Creek. Beyond that is Pine Oak. It's a small town in northeast Texas, far enough from the big city for residents to be in their own little world. I grew up in Pine Oak, but after moving away just out of high school, I cut all ties and left some bad memories in my wake before returning to the area, opening up my dream bookstore, and calling Wire Creek my home. I was close enough to feel the tug pulling me back toward Pine Oak every now and then, but far enough away that I wouldn't likely run into people who knew the old me. My bookstore, the sequel. It had been my second chance at happiness when I'd needed it the most, hence the name, and is something that I'm immensely proud of, even if being this close to Pine Oak brings back some bad memories I'd rather forget. I have, or had, rather, a few friends in Pine Oak. It's not a stretch to think that they're still there. No one really ever leaves Pine Oak. I haven't seen or spoken to them in years, though, so I think I've lost the right to call them friends. Actually, that right probably disappeared when I vanished without a word after graduation, and I'm not naive enough to think I'd be forgiven for that. But the stupid little hopeful cheerleader that pops into my mind every now and then likes to remind me that my girls from high school would welcome me back as though no time had passed, if I would just grow up and make my return to the area known. The fact that my mom is still there, not that it matters since we don't speak anymore, is the driving force that has kept me at a distance, if I'm being honest. I don't need the memory of her to become a daily reality. Not after everything that happened. Never again. Get yourself together, Caroline. You're stronger than this, I mumble to the sign just outside my window. I've become stronger than this. Logically, I know this, but still, old habits don't ever really die, do they? I didn't survive the past 12 years to let fear keep me from living the life I've made. I promised myself that I'd take control of my life every day. It's time to stop making up reasons to stay closed off and not begin my new path of living. Impulsiveness might be something outside of my nature, but the only way I can think of to shake another call from him is to leap off the cliff of my comfort zone and make myself live. I don't know why, after almost 5 years away, he started calling again. If it weren't for the memories long suppressed that hearing his voice brings back, I would thank him, though. It's because of that call that I was forced to really see my life, and what I saw, I didn't like. Pushing those thoughts out of my mind, I turned the wheel to get back on the road and take the long way around Pine Oaks limits so I can get to the town on the other side, Lawbone. I could go home. I probably should. But I really don't want to be alone right now. Something my mind knew immediately during that call because I ran out into the storm the second I'd tossed my phone across the room. So I point my car to the one place I know without a shadow of a doubt will let me lose that feeling of being alone by finding safety in numbers, but still remaining by myself at the same time. Hazel's. The local honky-tonk is just outside of Pine Oak, on the farthest opposite end of Wire Creek, inside Lawbone city limits. Okay, to call it a honky-tonk would be a stretch. It's a motorcycle bar that plays country music. It caters to a rough and rowdy crowd, but no one in there ever pays me a lick of mind. Of course, that's probably because one of my best friends is the owner, but even when he isn't there, I'm the last thing a man inside that place is looking for. I'm shy by nature, an introverted book nerd who can handle fictional people a lot better than I can deal with real ones. I'm not a head-turner. I never really gained the skills needed to make myself look anything but, well, plain. I tried. In high school, my best girlfriends always tried to teach me the ins and outs of being girly, but I was too interested in sticking my nose in a book and crushing on fictional cowboys to really retain any of it. I figured that, like in my books, the right man would love me for me, and not for what the enhancements of makeup and fancy clothes could do. I glance up at my reflection in the rearview as I pull into the lot and park and fight off a cringe. I look sad, and that sadness makes me look much older than my nearly 30 years. My brown eyes don't shine with the mirth most women my age have dancing in theirs. Those are the carefree women who still believe they'll find a life partner to ride off into the sunset with. Just the thought makes me snort. Where I always found my ordinary features and dull brown hair to be boring, I know the one thing I actually do have going for me is my figure. I've got the body of a dancer, thin and petite. It's my greatest attribute. I might not have all the curves most men seem to love, but I've been blessed with a body that requires minimum work to keep trim and firm. There isn't anything about me that particularly screams, "Hey, look at me," but I've been told men like my shape because it makes them feel like they were made to protect me. Or so my good friend Luke always says. "Speak of the devil," I mumble with a smile, seeing Luke standing under the awning outside of Hazel's front door, blowing a long stream of smoke from his mouth. The burning tip of his cigarette stands out in the darkness around him. Luke Hazel, half of my best friend Duo and twin brother to Lucy, is a dog. But at least he's an honest dog. Loyal to those he loves, protective to the max. With his harmless flirting, he's also helped to give me back some of the confidence I lost over the years.
"Carrie?"
he drawls when I step out of my car and pull my crossbody purse over my head. I roll my eyes and cringe at the nickname he knows I hate. "Lukey Dookey," I jest, tossing out the nickname that I know he hates, placing my hands on my hips and arching a brow at him. Not even fazed, he kicks off the wall he's been leaning against and walks my way. No, he struts, because a simple walk wouldn't be good enough for this guy. He thinks he's God's gift to the females of the world. I laugh softly and fall into his arms for a hug when he reaches me.
"Not a good night to be here, sweetheart."
I push my hands against his abs and look up at him. And what makes tonight different from all the other nights you say the same thing?
"Rowdy, babe. Got some out-of-towners riding through looking for a good time. Not sure how they'll act when I pull the shotgun out if they try to get in your shorts."
I feel my nose twitch as I frown at him. "No one's gonna worry about me, Luke." He shakes his head.
"Not sure how many times I have to drill it in your head, babe, but every man in there is gonna worry about you.
Don't be ridiculous, Luke. Even if you're right and I get some attention tonight, I've dealt with worse than some drunken bikers and you know it. And who says I wouldn't enjoy a little bit of their attention anyway? He frowns.
Yeah, Carrie, but that doesn't mean I want to put you through some bullshit just because I know you can handle it.
His frown deepens, and I know the exact moment the rest of what I said registers. He doesn't call me on it, but he knows better than to ask if I'm ready for that kind of thing.
Told you, just like I tell Luce, this ain't a place to find a bedfellow.
I smile at the mention of Lucy. You and I both know you're going to act like my babysitter the second I walk in there. So how about you stop acting like my big brother now and let me get a drink and forget about things for a while, hmm? His eyes narrow.
What you got to forget about, sweetheart?
Too late, I realize my mistake. I haven't even talked to Lucy about the calls I've been getting, but with my emotions at the boiling point, my mind just slipped. Luke, the big macho protector that he's always been, isn't going to be happy without hearing what got me driving over to Hazel's on a Tuesday night, either. I sigh. I promise I'll fill you in later, but please, Luke, let me just forget about it all for a little while. He nods, but I can tell he isn't happy about giving in. One big, thickly muscled arm waves toward the door in a sweeping gesture for me to proceed, and even though he seems to be caving, I know a long talk will be coming. I just need to make sure I've had enough to drink so that I'm too intoxicated to deal with that chat tonight. The heavy wall of smoke slams into me as we enter the bar. I always thought it was funny that Luke would go outside to have a cigarette when walking into Hazel's is probably the equivalent of smoking an entire pack of cigarettes in just one go. Most non-smokers find the scent repugnant, but not me. I've always loved the smell of smoke. Any kind of smoke, even if that is weird as hell. An old Alan Jackson song booms through the air as we walk through the crowded bar. I feel the earlier tension slide off my body with each step, and I know I made the right call in coming here. Luke grabs my arms, stopping me before I almost walk into a big burly man and pulls me to his side, securing me in place with an arm over my shoulders. I look up at him, smiling when I see his handsome face scowling down at me. What? I mouth up at him, my smile growing. He just shakes his head, continuing to guide me through the crowded room until we're at the very end of the U-shaped bar, closest to his office. He taps the shoulder of a man sitting down and, without a word, waves his hand in some sort of code that must say, "Get the hell up," because the young cowboy doesn't even pause, sliding off the stool and disappearing into a darkened corner.
You sit.
Luke pushes me toward the empty stool and crosses his arms with a glare at the men closest to the seat he demanded I take.
You could say please, you know, I mumble under my breath, but I still follow his order. Could, but I won't.
No surprise there, Lukey. He bends down until his nose is touching mine.
Watch the Lukeys in here. Carrie.
Whatever. How about a drink, Mr. Bartender?
Not joking, sweetheart. Don't want the men in here to think you're fair game.
Look around, Luke. No one is worried about me. I don't know if that's actually true, but seeing as I've never been the type to turn a bar full of men's attention my way, I'm fairly confident in my assessment.
Blind as a damn bat,
he mutters loud enough for me to hear clearly over the noise, not backing away. I open my mouth to give him a smart-ass retort, but stop when I hear a deep, rumbling laugh to my side. I look over, not seeing much apart from the dark cowboy hat next to me. Its owner's face is concealed by shadows as he looks down at the golden-colored liquor in his glass. I can see a stubbled, very strong jaw, though, the deliciously strong kind that's angled in such a way you could swear on a stack of Bibles on Sunday morning that someone carved it straight out of stone.
Just please stay here and out of trouble. You need to use the little girl's room. Do it in my office. I can't run this place if I'm constantly worried about you. Got her, Luke.
The stranger next to me mumbles loud enough to be heard over the music, still not looking up from his glass. Luke flicks his gaze in my neighbor's direction, and even though there's no way he can see the man's face, he nods before pulling his attention away and back on me.
Be good, sweetheart.
He turns and stomps away. I'm always good, I yell at his back, making the man next to me chuckle in such a low-pitched, manly way, I almost feel like calling it a chuckle would be a sin. What? I am, I defend.
Sure you are, sugar.
His deep, velvety, smooth voice causes a wave of awareness to wash over me. Not that it matters, since I don't know you and all, but I'll have you know I'm the very definition of good. I wouldn't know how to be bad if it bit me in the butt. He turns his head toward me. I'm unable to see his face, which is still hidden by the shadows, but I can feel his eyes on me. Their scrutiny is almost like a physical caress.
That's so,
he rumbles after another few pounding heartbeats of silent study. I nod mutely, wishing I had a drink to wash down the nervousness.
How do you know Luke?
He continues. He and his sister are my best friends, I tell him without hesitation.
Not your boyfriend?
He drawls. No. He's not my boyfriend, I answer, confused by his questioning.
So what's a good girl like you doing in a place like this?
Maybe I'm sick of being a good girl, I mumble, wishing I could see his eyes. He continues to study me, and I shift in my seat. Good heavens, what kind of pull does this stranger have over me? I can't even look away, not that I want to. So I study him just as fiercely, even if I can't see his face. I can still see him, and what a mighty fine sight he is. Dressed in the typical uniform of most cowboys around here, he's got his well-built frame in a navy blue button-down shirt, tucked into jeans that I'm sure mold to his amazing-looking body perfectly when he's standing. Even in the dim light, I can see the dirty boots propped up on the step under the bar that keeps short legs like mine from dangling in the air. His hand wrapped around the tumbler is tanned, making me think he must work outside, but it's the long fingers that hold my focus as he uses them to slowly spin his glass against the bar top.
Want to?
Pulling my eyes from the strangely erotic sight of his hand, I look toward his shadowed face. Want to what?
Be bad, sugar.
Heat, hot as fire, washes over me with his words. Holy cow. My jaw works, but words elude me. I don't even know this man's name, let alone anything about him, and if my rusty knowledge of flirting is right, he just propositioned me. Why I find that as hot as I do, I'll never know, but before I even know what's happening, my brain finally figures out how to get the words past my shocked jaw. I think I do. My eyes widen at the same time his hat dips, and then he turns and holds up two fingers toward Luke farther down the bar. Call it male intuition, whatever kind of magic men have to know when another member of their brotherhood needs a drink, but Luke looks up the second the dark cowboy's fingers are in the air and nods. Not even a minute later, he's placing two glasses, much like the one my mysterious companion just finished, in front of us. Luke walks away without a word, clearly trusting this man if he's willing to let me drink with him and not give me a speech about drinking responsibly. When the chill of glass touches my knuckles, I look down.
Something tells me your mind might be ready to be bad, sugar, but your nerves aren't there yet. Goes down smooth, but sip it nonetheless.
My brain, still clearly under the dark cowboy's control, doesn't have a problem working now. My hand curls around the glass and I bring it to my lips, letting him control me without fighting it. He's not wrong. It goes down smooth as silk. At least, the first two sips do. Then I get a little confident and take a deep swallow, only to sputter my way through it.
Sip,
he calmly demands, leaning into me enough that I feel the heat of his body against my bare arms.
Want you feeling calm when I show you how fun it is to be bad, not drunk.
Who says I want to be bad with you? I ask, taking a very small sip this time.
Babe, you want to be bad with me.
He's right. I do. You seem confident. I look over the glass, trying to see through the shadows, but give up when I realize just how well he's cloaked. He doesn't respond, but instead takes a drink from his own glass. I don't even know you.
Wouldn't make a difference if you did.
You know, some people might actually think that you're actually just cocky and not confident.
I'm old enough to go after what I want without playing games. There ain't a thing cocky about that.
God, his voice is pure sex. And what's that?
You'll find out.
He promises darkly, playing the game despite his words. Cocky. His deep laugh is low and gritty, almost as if it's a sound that normally doesn't come from him. For whatever reason, it makes me want to know everything I can about this man. This stranger. We fall into a comfortable silence, but one that carries so much promise I can feel it building inside of me. Luke comes over to talk to me when he can, but it isn't often. My glass is never empty for long, but on Luke's fifth pass with the bottle of top-shelf whiskey, the dark cowboy places his hand over the top of my glass. I look over at him instead of Luke to see him shaking his head.
I got her, but how about water and close out my tab? You got it, Davis.
Luke laughs, turning to grab me a bottle of water from the fridge behind him. Your name is Davis? I ask the man next to me, weighing the sound of it. He doesn't acknowledge me, waiting for Luke to come back with his credit card and his receipt to sign. He scribbles his signature and hands it back to Luke, dropping his feet to the wooden floor under us and stepping back. I follow his movements with my eyes, waiting to see what he'll do next, already anticipating the rush of disappointment when he leaves, knowing I'll likely never see him again. My jaw drops the second his hand comes out, palm up, in a gesture that clearly means he wants me to go with him. I look from his hand up to the darkness shadowing his face, wondering if I should actually be careless enough to go off with some stranger I don't know.
You gonna give me shit about this?
Confused, I look from that tanned hand with the long fingers back up to him, but I can tell by the tilt of his hat that he's speaking to someone behind me.
Would it matter?
Luke laughs behind me, and I turn to look at him.
Not really. Only opinion that I care about is hers, but still asking.
Luke shakes his head, but still smiles.
Not her keeper, but I assure you if I had a problem with this shit, I wouldn't have sat her next to you and continued to refill her glass.
Luke looks down at me and gives me a wink.
Been a while, darling. Make sure he wraps it up.
I gasp and feel heat blossoming on my cheeks as Luke turns with a deep laugh and walks away. I'm going to kill him. Heat blankets my back a second later, and two strong hands clasp my hips. I feel him move until his breath is at my ear.
Let's go be bad, hmm?
Am I going to do this? Go off with some man I don't know and sleep with him? Because I would be a fool to think this is anything else. Earlier, I promised myself I was done living a ghost of a life and that I was going to find a way to be wild and free. I've never slept with someone I wasn't in a long-term relationship with. Oh, who am I kidding? I've only slept with one man. To say I'm in over my head here is an understatement. Lucy does it all the time. Hell, she keeps telling me I need a good rebound romp in the sheets. Screw it. I'll regret it if I don't at least jump in the saddle again, letting this man go without taking him for a ride. I take a deep breath, lean back against the strong body behind me, and nod. Yeah. Let's go be bad. My back vibrates with his laughter, and I shiver in his hold, my wide eyes meeting Luke's across the bar. He gives me a wink and smiles his ruggedly handsome, crooked smile, tipping his chin toward the door in silent confirmation that he has no problem with the stranger leading me away. Knowing that the dark cowboy has Luke's trust breaks the final restraint on my reservations. I turn, look up at my companion, and smile. Lead the way. 2. Caroline. Bar at the End of the World by Kenny Chesney. Deliciously reckless. That's really the only way I can explain the feeling that's rushing through my body right now. The darkness around us makes my other senses come to the forefront. The rasp of his 5 o'clock shadow against my sensitive skin as he kisses and licks his way down the column of my throat only makes my arousal spike to dangerous levels. Had we made it farther than even a foot into the motel room across from Hazel's, I would have turned on a light so I could finally see him. But now it's more fun to continue this ride with that unknown factor. He can be anyone I want him to be now, or anyone I don't want him to be. For one night, I can take the pleasure my body hasn't had in years and live off the memories of it until I'm ready to give another man a chance. Hopefully, I won't let another 5 years pass before that happens again. I push my hands from his shoulders and palm his jaw as his stubble prickles against my fingers while my hands wander up to his hair. His hat falls to the floor with a thud, and I know he's just as lost in me as I am in him because he doesn't even make a move to pick it up. He lets out a deep grunt when I mold myself against his body, seeking some sort of friction. The next thing I know, my back is against the door and he's gripping my bottom. His mouth hits my jaw with a bite of his teeth, making a squeak of pleasure shoot up my throat, and his deep rumble of laughter reaches my ears as he presses me harder into the door with his hips. The heavy bulge of his erection against that spot makes me so desperate for him that I whimper in relief when his mouth finally closes over mine in a wet tangle of tongues. I've never been kissed so thoroughly. This is the kind of kiss that sets the bar for any that might follow. The kind that shows you everything you've been missing and everything you never knew you wanted. I'm going to be comparing every kiss I ever have to my dark cowboys, even though I know there's a good chance no one will ever compare. The sounds coming from my mouth, the ones being swallowed by his, are nothing short of needy. My hips move in tandem with the thrusts of his, and even though we're both fully clothed, I know it won't take much more of this for me to go off like the town's fireworks on the 4th of July.
"Fuck, you taste just like apple pie,"
he whispers against my lips, breaking away with a gasp. "Huh?"
"God damn, I love apple pie,"
he says before his mouth is back on mine, this time with a whole new kind of hunger deepening his kisses. I'm held captive, enraptured. Then his hands move from my bottom to glide up my torso. He lifts his hard chest off mine, and suddenly those delicious fingers are at my breasts. Even if I had big boobs, his hands would dwarf them, I'm sure. But as it is, he covers both with a firm grasp before adjusting his hold with a deft twist of the wrists. His mouth continues to feast on mine while his huge hands learn my body with slow movements. I tear my mouth from his with a breathy moan when he pushes my shirt up and slips his fingers into the cups of my bra to tweak my nipples. "Oh, God," I moan when he does it again.
"I can't get enough of you,"
he rumbles. "Please," I beg, not with the slightest clue as to what I'm begging for. His hips dig even harder into mine as he leans back, supporting me against the door with that connection alone as he pulls my shirt off. The darkness makes me feel more confident than I normally would be, almost half-naked with a man. No, a stranger. "Yours too," I tell him, as his fingers move to unclasp my bra. "I want to feel your skin on mine," I breathe, taking over the task so he'll hopefully give me what I want. I fumble in my haste to feel more of this dangerous arousal he's creating in my body. But the second my bra is free and dangling toward the floor, his naked chest collides against mine, pushing me into the door with a force that sends the air rushing out of my lungs. His mouth hits my collarbone at the same time his hands grasp my bottom, sliding me up the door until I feel the wet heat of his breath against my breast. Then he stops. "What are you doing?" I cry out, tugging him by his thick hair toward my aching breast. When he doesn't budge, I drop my head back with a thump hard enough to make my eyes water.
"Fuck. Give me just a second, darling,"
he rasps out, his heavy breath wafting against my flesh, causing my whole body to spark with another wave of need. "Please, Davis," I whine. He grunts, the sound of his name turning into a loud scream of pleasure when his mouth covers my nipple. Sucking deeply, he sends arousal shooting from every single nerve in my body. I've never in my life felt anything like it. One hand starts to caress and tease my other breast until I'm positive I'm going to come from this alone. My hips pump against his abs, and I wish I wasn't so short and that it was his crotch against mine. But with muscles like his, I'm thinking I still might be able to. More. Need more. He pops his mouth free, giving one more lick, then spins us and stomps away from the door. I'm so lost in him that when he drops me, I don't even think to panic. The hard mattress gives me enough of a bounce that when he follows on top of me, we collide with dual grunts. He's got me naked in a matter of seconds, in a move so skillful I don't even realize I'm being undressed until a rush of cool air brushes against my wet core. I don't give myself a second to think about where he learned that. Instead, I push off the bed with my feet against the mattress and rut against his denim-covered erection. His groans mingle with mine, making me drunk with pleasure. The darkness around us, with not even the moon to cast some sort of light on us, only heightens the pleasure until I'm going out of my mind. "I need you," I tell my dark cowboy.
"Fuck yes,"
he answers, but leaves me abruptly to stand. I start to protest until I hear his belt clang and the sound of his boots being towed off.
"Light on or off, sweetness?"
he rumbles. "Off." If he had an issue with my answer, he didn't verbalize it. Instead, he continues to undress.
"You taste like apple pie all over?"
he oddly asks when the sounds of him getting naked stop. "What?"
"Never tasted anything better,"
he continues. Lifting off the mattress with my elbows, I start to reach for him, but stop the second he speaks again, and I know I'll spend the rest of my life swearing I saw the bright lights of heaven not even a moment later.
"Can't wait to find out if your pussy tastes as sweet as the rest of you."
Oh, my heavens! I scream when he grabs my hips and his mouth covers my sex. My eyes roll back in my head as I scream my throat raw, coming instantly with waves of intense pleasure that just keep getting more intense as his vibrating groans shoot against my core. My toes curl, my fingers cramp as I fist the sheets, and I thrash my head from side to side with the roaring of my thundering heart matching the storm raging through my body. He continues to drink from me, sucking, nipping, licking, devouring me. The ragged sounds coming from me ring in my ears as I continue to come, begging him to never stop. All of this, without even knowing what the skillful man between my legs looks like, but knowing I will never forget him. He gives me one long, slow lick from my clenching center to my oversensitive clit before releasing his hold on my hips and climbing up my body. Limply, I watch his shadow in the darkness move until something falls on my chest.
"You want to be bad, sweetness? Then let's be bad,"
he tells me against my mouth before kissing me. The taste of my arousal thick on his tongue makes me turn my head and deepen the kiss. I could kiss this man for days and days. He rolls us, my legs falling to straddle his hips as the hard length of his erection sits between my soaked lower lips. I start rocking my hips mindlessly, needing to be filled with him. He gives me free rein until his breathing is just as frantic as mine. Only then does he stall, his fingers digging into my thighs.
"Condom. Get it on my cock and ride me until that sweet fucking pussy sucks me dry,"
he demands. My hands shake as I search between our bodies for what he must have dropped on the mattress before rolling us. Finally finding it by my knee, I shift and grab his thickness gently. I give him a few pumps, but stop when I realize just how big the man under me is. I look up and gasp, adding my other hand to better size him up. Holy shit, this will never fit inside of me.
"My cock will fit just fine inside of that sweet pussy."
"Shit," I hiss, giving him a squeeze with both hands. "You weren't supposed to hear that."
"Gathered that, sugar. But trust me when I say you're soaked, and it'll fit just fine."
He's not wrong. I'm so wet I can feel the dampness spreading across his thigh. I shift my hips, the friction making me pant loudly.
"Fucking hell. Get that shit on me so you can fuck me.
He strains. What? I sputter, freezing with both hands still fisting his huge erection. You want me to... I stop, unable to finish my thought.
Say it, Carrie,
he tells me, the nickname not bothering me as much coming from him. He must have heard Luke call me that, and I don't correct him, using it as my own cloak.
Say you're going to fuck me. Tell me how you're going to ride my cock.
Oh, my God. This man is going to be my undoing. I squirm, but don't speak, as the shyness I thought I'd lost comes roaring back. I start to drop him, but he must have realized I was losing my nerve. His hands shoot off my thighs and around each of my fists, closing around my hold roughly and pumping himself through our joined hold. A long and pained sound leaves him. He lifts up, one hand cupping my center, one long finger sinking into me and hooking inside my body as I scream.
You feel this? Feel what your body wants? Or how fucking hard I am for you? I want you to use me, Carrie. I want you to ride me until I feel that wet pussy dripping down my balls, and then I want to feel that sweetness of yours clamp down on me as you come. You'll keep riding me, though, won't you, sweetness? You'll keep giving me more because you want to know what being bad feels like. And I'll give it to you just as soon as you give me what I want. Then I'm gonna flip you over until your ass is in the air and your ponytail is in my fist with my balls slapping against the soaked pussy until you come again. Fuck you so hard, darling. You're gonna feel me for days. Then you're gonna get your sweet ass back against this mattress so I can put my knees at your sides and pump my cock until I come all over these fucking tits.
He slides his finger in and out of my body a few times, my core fluttering around him. I'm ready to come again.
Show me you want to be bad,
he says, his voice straining as his erection grows even harder between our hold. I rip my hand away from his flesh, and my mouth finds his as I search for the condom again. This time, he's the one that finds it, but he pulls my hand from his neck and places the packet in my palm as I continue to roll my tongue against his. As I tear it open, my mouth leaves his and starts kissing every inch of his body while I fumble my way through putting a condom on. Then, thank the heavens above, I finish at the same time my mouth finds his nipple. I bite it, not even sure what's come over me, but I get a rush of power from the guttural noises spilling from him. I scoop my knees until I find him again between my legs, lifting up with my hands on his shoulders. Put your cock inside of me, I pant against his mouth, shocked at the brazen words that left my own without thought.
I thought you'd never ask, sugar,
he grunts, one hand leaving the breasts he'd been playing with to line himself up with my entrance. The second I feel his blunt tip, I let my body fall, taking every rock-hard inch of him at once. The pleasure is blinding, and I scream and scream and scream. Every single time I go to lift myself off of him, I feel a strangled sound leave my mouth.
Take it easy, darling. Fucking hell. Didn't think you would try to split yourself in two,
he mumbles, kissing me sweetly while helping me rock my hips to get used to the size of him. It doesn't take long for those sweet kisses to turn desperate and my body to need more. If he weren't such a large man, or maybe if I weren't such a small woman, I would have been able to ride him like he had wanted. But as it was, I couldn't even get myself halfway off his hardness before he realized I needed help. His hands clamp my hips and lift me all the way off before thrusting me down. We continue, both of us moving in a way that would make you think we'd been lovers for years. The sounds of my wetness fuel my desire as we swallow each other's moans. I'm going to, I pant.
Say it,
he grunts when I stop speaking.
Tell me what you're going to give me.
I'm going to... God, Davis, I'm going to come! I yell as I start to do just that. He drops me, hard and heavy, against him, and I start rocking my hips while my pleasure takes me to the brink of insanity. The whole time, he speaks soft words that I'm unable to understand through the force of my orgasm. Then he proves he's a man of his word, because I come again on my hands and knees while he pulls my head back with a strong grip on my ponytail, his balls slapping against my hypersensitive flesh. Then, and only then, does he pull free of me, flip me onto my back, and climb up my body with his knees digging into the mattress next to my sides. I feel the tip of him touch my chest a few times as he furiously pumps himself. Then the hot splash of his cum hits my chest as he bellows out into the shadows around us. I hadn't even registered him removing the condom, so lost was I in delicious pleasure. His body slackens when the last drop leaves him, giving me just enough of his weight, but clearly not all of it, since I can still breathe. I wiggle, the wetness on my breast starting to roll toward my neck, and lift one hand up to swipe at it. I'm not sure what makes me lick my fingers clean, but when the salty taste of him bursts against my tongue, I moan loudly.
"Fuck,"
he hisses breathlessly.
"Just came harder than I ever fucking have, and I'm ready to take more from you. You too sore for my cock again?"
"Hmm?" I moan, still sucking the taste of him off my fingers.
"Doesn't matter. Gonna fuck you again anyway."
And boy, does he. By the time we finally fall asleep, he's taken me once in the shower and again in the bed before pulling me into his arms seconds before I pass out. The last thought that goes through my mind before drifting off is if this was how living wild and free feels, I am never going to stop. Never.
3. Clayton. Dirt on My Boots by John Party. The overwhelming heat rushing through my body is enough to make me hate being a rancher during these hot-as-fuck summer months. The oppressing temperature assaults me the second I open my front door, the heat so stifling that it steals your breath straight from your damn lungs. The harder I work, the worse it gets, until I pray to whoever will listen for anything to filter some of these damn rays. Nothing changes the fact that shit needs to get done, and I'm the one who needs to do it. Trails of sweat drip down my back. Slow tracks of fiery wetness that feel like they burn my skin on the way to my belted jeans. I drop the pitchfork I've been using to add straw to the horse's stalls and rip my shirt off, wiping my brow with it before placing my hat back on my soaked head as I toss the garment behind me and continue with my task. Fucking Texas summers. It feels like hell rises from the ground every day. My days are all the same. I wake up, chug coffee, and work outside until well after the sun sets, and the rest of the people in Pine Oak have set off for dinner with their families. I'm alone, for all intents and purposes, and that feeling is even more pronounced on days when my brother and sister aren't around to distract me from my loneliness, which happens more frequently now that they're both married and living off the ranch. But even if I wanted to find someone like Maverick and Quinn did, there's no place in my life for the responsibility of being the sole provider of someone else's happiness anymore. I'm at the tail end of my 30s, and it's too late for me to worry about finding someone I love. No one can hurt me if I don't let them have the power to do it, which means I'm better off alone. Fucking hell, old man. What's crawled up your ass and dad? Got shit to do, Mav, I tell my brother, not stopping in my shoveling. Looks like you need a break from that shit you gotta do, brother. Drew isn't here today. If I don't get this shit done, I'm gonna be working all night. Tell me what you need so I can get this done. Lee wants you to come to dinner tomorrow. Does she now? Says she doesn't see you enough, though I'm not sure why she fucking cares. I bark out a laugh. Jealous? Fuck you, he retorts. Just saw her the other day when I stopped in at the pie hole. Why does she really want me to come to dinner? I hear my younger brother mumble something under his breath, and I smile despite the fact that I'm hot and exhausted and my mind is about a million other places. He continues to grumble, something he's always been mighty good at, as I finish placing the last few forkfuls of hay into the stall and turn to him. Even frustrated, I can see the contentment that his laugh now brings him written all over his face. I'm happy as fuck he's got that. It hasn't been an easy road for him and his wife, Leighton, but they finally found their way back to each other. Took him almost dying, his rodeo career ending, and our father's death to do it. But it happened regardless. So if anyone deserves the full to burst in life he has with Lee, It's my little brother. You didn't hear it from me, but she and Quinn want to corner you into coming to their baby shower or some shit like that. Fuck if I know, Clay. I don't even want to be a part of it, but every time Lee talks about the shower, her face does this thing that makes me want to give her anything in the damn world to keep it looking like that. So I'm here to make sure I keep getting those stars in her eyes and smiles on her lips. Even if it goes against everything to be begging my brother to come to a fucking baby shower. I laugh, low and deep. Admit you're just as over the fucking moon as she is, and I'll be there. I don't need him to, but part of me loves to hear him talk about how thrilled he is that he's going to be a father. Even though I'm only 3 years older than him, I basically raised him and Quinn when our mama took off. I reckon this is as close to parental pride as I'll ever get, which is why I keep taking that pride whenever opportunities arrive. He drops his brooding expression and gives me a smile that's usually only reserved for Lee. Shit, Clay. Can't even put it into words. But if that's what it means to feel like my heart is going to explode daily, then yeah, I'm over the fucking moon. Scared out of my skull, too, he admits, his smile dimming a little. Why's that? Did you know her mama had complications when she had Lee? That's why they never had any more youngins. She told me about how her mama almost died during childbirth, and all I can think about is what I'll do if I lose Lee. No longer feeling the joy of his happiness, I prop the pitchfork against the stall, walk over to him, and clasp his shoulder in support. Leighton's strong as hell, and doctors are trained a lot better than they were 30 years ago, Mav. Don't let that ruin your excitement. She's going to be just fine, and in the end you'll have a little piece of the two of you keeping you up all night. I won't be able to move on if I lose her, he continues, completely ignoring my attempt at lightening the mood, and I realize just how much this has been weighing on him. Maverick, I hiss through the thickness in my damn throat and pull my brother into my arms. His own come around me with bruising force. Can't talk to her about this shit, Clay. I don't want her worrying about it when she should be focusing on all the happy shit, but it's tearing me apart just thinking about losing her. Fuck, brother. Just like when we were younger and he was upset, he drops his forehead against my shoulder, and even though I'm no longer taller than him, he seems to shrink in my hold. It's then that I realize my baby brother, the badass ex-rodeo champion, is crumbling, his silent sobs only evident because of the choppy breaths coming from his lips. I could lose her. You won't. You don't know that, he bellows, ripping free from my arms and throwing his hands in the air. Every day we get closer to the baby being born, I feel like I'm losing her. I can't turn it off. Fucking hell. I pull my phone out of my back pocket and move my thumb against the screen while he paces and mumbles in front of me, placing the device to my ear a second later. Hey, my sister sings through the phone. Tate around, darling? Maverick stops in his tracks and looks over at me with a blank face. No hint of anger. The fear gripping him too deep for him to be mad that I'm bringing someone else into this and exposing his vulnerable fears to them. Yeah? Everything okay? All's fine, Quinny. Just thought of something I needed to ask him. Forgot the other day when I ran into him in town. Let me go grab him. We've been working on a junker he bought off Craigslist. Can you believe that? Only man in the world who would buy his wife a rust bucket as a gift. Sounds like the perfect gift if that wife is you, I tell her, forcing lightness into my tone while my eyes stay trained on Maverick. It is, isn't it? She sighs happily. Here he is. Love you, big brother. Love you back, darling. I wait, hearing what sounds a hell of a lot like them making out before he comes on the line. Need you to come to the ranch, Tate. Keep that stupid smile on your face so Quinn doesn't think something is wrong. Tell her I need help putting together a gift for the baby or some shit, and come now. Got it? Need me to bring any tools? He plays along instantly. See you quick, Tate. Yeah, don't worry. I won't tell Quinn you're putting together a gift for her, man. I hear Quinn make some girly-as-fuck noise as I disconnect the call and push the phone back into my pocket. You're going to sit down and listen to what he has to say, Maverick. Then the three of us are going to go inside and have some cold ones before you go home to your wife with a clear conscience. Got it? He grunts, doesn't speak, but drops against the wall. He slides until his ass is on the ground and his head is hung low. The whole time my heart breaks, knowing he's been carrying this load secretly until it became too much for him to keep buried, Work can wait for another day. Right now, my brother needs me. And there's never been and never will be anything I won't do for the people I love. I sit against the wall opposite him while we wait. 15 minutes later, Tate comes roaring down the driveway in the truck my sister restored for him almost a year ago. I'd sent him a text right after getting off the phone with him to let him know to find us in the old barn that we use for our personal horses. This one, while still nice, isn't top of the line like the one we use to breed, and it lacks the air conditioning system we put in the breeding stable a few years back. By the time Tate comes running in, I've finally gotten used to sitting in a puddle of my own sweat. "Jesus Christ, Clay. Give me a fucking heart attack. What's going on?" he breathes, and I finally look away from Maverick. My sister's husband might not have been born and raised in Pine Oak, but all it took was 1 year back here, and he shed every ounce of the city boy he'd become when he lived in Atlanta. Even if he still wears ball caps and not Stetsons, he looks like any other man that grew up here. Of course he would when Quinn's got his ass working on trucks covered in dirt and grease. "Maverick," I tell him, looking back at my little brother. He hasn't moved since I called Tate, who conveniently happens to be our town's lady doctor in addition to being our brother-in-law. If anyone knows the facts that can set Maverick's mind at ease, it's Tate. "Mav, want me to tell Tate, or do you?" He grunts, and I take that as him wanting me to fill Tate in, so I do. Each word that crosses my lips makes Tate look more and more sympathetic. His own wife, our sister, is due only a week after Lee, so aside from Tate being one hell of a doctor, he can sympathize with Maverick on a level I couldn't begin to imagine. "Jesus, man, that's some heavy shit. I'd die without her." Maverick finally looks up, his eyes pleading with the two of us. "You wouldn't. Not because you'd move on, but because you'd have a reason to keep going. But that's not gonna happen." Tate moves over to his side and starts spewing a bunch of medical knowledge that makes my ears bleed. But by the time he's done explaining to Maverick just how safe Lee is, I finally see the tension leave my little brother's body. Not only has medicine become more advanced, but we doctors are always thinking 10 steps ahead, man. I promise you, Leighton and the baby are gonna be fine. When the three of us are done talking, there isn't a sober one between us. Quinn came about an hour ago to pick up Tate, and Maverick just drove off with Leighton. Judging by him not being able to keep his hands off her when she showed up, I know I can go to bed tonight not worried about my baby brother. The second their taillights disappear and the sounds of the night meet my ears, I feel the loneliness settle around me once again. Then I head back to the barn to finish the work I abandoned earlier this afternoon. But my mind is on my family and the apple pie I have waiting in the fridge thanks to Leighton. If I was a different man, maybe I'd do something about the dead weight of my solitude that's getting heavier and heavier to drag around. But I'm not, so I continue my work in silence before going to bed. Alone.
4. Caroline. I Could Use a Love Song by Maren Morris. Dusting has become the bane of my existence. However, I do it with a smile because I love every second that I spend inside my bookstore, even every second I spend outside of it since my apartment is on top of the sequel and the scent of books travels up the stairs and into my living space. There's no better smell on this earth than the pages of a book. Not one thing. Well, maybe that of a certain dark cowboy. I smile to myself. The memories of that night still hang with a delicious heaviness in my thoughts, even a month later. I always thought I wouldn't be able to detach the emotion from sex, but when I woke up alone the morning after that glorious night, all I could do was smile and take my well-used body home. I'd needed that night more than I thought. I needed to remember how to feel again without letting someone close. And it's been the memories from our night that have kept the loneliness I was drowning in at bay, and a smile on my face. I think, in a way, my dark cowboy made it possible for me to not have any more lingering fear over the fact that my ex had started contacting me again. "Thinking about that cowboy again?" Lucy sings with a smile, meeting me in the romance section toward the back of the store with her own duster. "That obvious, huh?" Only on the days that end with a Y, she jokes. Yeah, yeah. You know, all you have to do is ask Luke. I bet he'd give you the stranger's name and you could enjoy another night of having your world rocked. I laugh. It was special, Luce, but I don't want to ruin what I got from him by trying to make it something it isn't. And how do you know it couldn't be more? How do you know it could? Ooh, feisty. The bell chimes, letting us know there's a customer, and Lucy takes off with a little skip, the smile still on her face. That girl is perpetually happy, and it doesn't take much to make her maniacally happy. She's been riding the same high as me for the past month, although she's been riding it for an entirely different reason. My best friend is just happy that I'm happy. For her, it's as simple as that. She's seen too many times when I wasn't close to that, been there for me since I met her at 18, and I know she'll be there for me until I die. I hear her greet our newest customer, and I continue dusting, moving through the romance books slowly as I study the spines. Romance is my favorite genre, the hopeless romantic in me still there despite everything my love life has been through, and I can't help it when my thoughts drift back to him. Our night together was the stuff fantasies are built from. There wasn't a single second of our coupling that gave me a hint to who he was. Even in the shower, we washed each other in darkness. He took me against the bathroom counter in darkness. We fumbled back to the bed in darkness. Even if a part of me wishes I knew who he was, I wasn't kidding when I told Lucy that I didn't want to cheapen the memory of our time together if he turns out to be less than the perfect man I've created in my mind. It has nothing to do with what he might look like, but I'm afraid that if I were to find him and we had another chance at coming together, it'd never live up to the magic of that night. So I'm almost completely content with never knowing. Almost. "Did you move the pregnancy books?" Lucy asks, popping her head around the shelf I was working on tidying up. "Oh, sorry, I forgot to tell you. They're toward the front now, over by the self-help books. I didn't think it was right to have them all the way in the back and on the bottom shelf, making it a little easier for the mamas to be and all, keeping them up front." "Gotcha," she says, smile in place and pep in her damn step. I shake my head and smirk.
"Holy shit, Lee! It is her!"
I feel my jaw drop and quickly turn with a squeak. No way. I haven't heard that voice or that name in years. "Quinn?" I exclaim, placing my duster on the shelf and rushing forward to pull her into a hug about the same time I notice her round belly. "Oh my goodness! Congratulations, Quinn!" She pulls away, smiling and rubbing her swollen and very pregnant belly.
"Thank you. I can't believe it's you. I thought I recognized your voice."
"Caroline?" I hear behind Quinn, and then Leighton James is pulling me into her arms, hugging me just as tight as I am her.
"Holy crap! You too?"
I laugh, looking from belly to belly, my laughter growing. I shouldn't be surprised you two would be pregnant together. There wasn't a thing y'all did without the other growing up. How close are your due dates? They both beam, then simultaneously exclaim, "A week!" "Of course it is," I say, laughing even harder at the fact that the two childhood best friends, both born within the same week, are pregnant with their babies due a week apart. "It sure is good to see you two."
"Have you been living in Wire Creek long?"
Quinn asks, still stroking her belly.
"I thought I heard you were in Houston, or was it Dallas?"
She looks at Lee in question before focusing back on me. I shake my head. "Austin, actually. I lived there after college, but moved to Wire Creek a few years ago." "Never thought I'd see the day. You high-tailed it out of here so quick I think you still had your cap and gown on from graduation," Leighton laughs. She isn't wrong. I took it off on the road out of town and tossed it out the window. What can I say? I was young and foolish.
"Who was it you were dating back then?"
I know Quinn probably means the question as one of those toss-away ones old friends ask when they haven't seen each other in over 10 years. But if she only knew how deep it slices me. I take a deep breath and school my features. It's in the past.
No sense in bringing the details up to two girls whom I haven't seen in too long. Two girls who were my closest friends years ago. John Lewis, I tell her, pretty damn proud of myself